Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. There are some lines of thinking that I've noticed in many areas that I really want to address, and there are two that are somewhat related, and in this video I want to tackle the first of them. This is the issue of, let's call it, European militaristic thinking versus Jewish business thinking. And then, as a separate topic, I want to tackle the issue of white European physical colonization versus Jewish and elite financial colonization. So these are two topics. I've actually been pondering these topics for a very long time, and I want to discuss them. So the first one for this video is the issue of European, but maybe I could also say European, Aryan, white, militaristic thinking versus Jewish business thinking. Because there are things that people say, and that governments say, and the US government says it, and politicians say it, and it's actually very confusing. And in my view, it's rubbish. It's just total junk. But one needs to understand what exactly is going on here. So, for example, you will see the US government. Let's take the US government as a prime example, but others in the West follow on similar principles. The US government will, for example, be constantly bending over backwards in order to pretend that it needs to please everybody in the whole world. So they are constantly hammering whites and attacking even their own white citizens, but they will bend over backwards for somebody from Africa or somebody from Asia or the Middle East or anywhere. They are constantly in their propaganda and in their actual political talk. They are constantly apologizing for whites, attacking their own society, while going out of their way to bend over backwards for anybody else who's non-white. Immigrants pouring in over the border who are non-white, they will embrace them and so on. And why is this? Another related topic that also plays into this, that I will mention as I need to, is the topic of Professor Quigley, the professor in America who had access to secret society records and who wrote a history in a book that was called Tragedy and Hope. And this was also a very strange thing, and this happened in the 1960s. Quigley does give us some insights into a strange American type of thinking that I do want to address as well, also in a separate video, but some of it does have relevance here. Quigley was a lecturer for 30 years on the topic of the evolution of civilization, and he gave a lecture at a university for 30 years non-stop on the evolution of civilization. And early in 2020, I actually went through all his work in this regard, and I found some very interesting things there. And one of the things that Quigley brought up was the issue of race. And I am convinced that that is where one of the greatest weaknesses of Quigley's writings can be found. He brought up the issue of race, and he very carefully ignored biology and IQ tests. Now, Quigley is a very fascinating fellow. Even though he is largely a representative for the enemy, what I like about Quigley is that it gives me some kind of insight into the thinking, into actual academic thinking and thinking at a high level in America. I enjoy it because it gives me some kind of basis to work on. Because you see, they just make statements. The politicians just make statements and they say, oh, well, you see, we've got to allow for diversity. Diversity is our strength and we have to keep the little black boys happy. Don't make the black boy angry. But you don't understand what it is that is driving them. Why do they say those things? What is the basis of their thinking? And that is where Quigley is fascinating. And I'm convinced that a lot of Quigley's lecturing and education turned him into a kind of a liberal superhero, a kind of a liberal super scientist. And he had such an influence on people, and they went out there, and I think quite a lot of those people ended up even in government in the USA. And his thinking, his teachings at university have a massive influence, I think, on what actually goes on. But how he arrived at it is also a very fascinating story. But he was a genuine academic. He was a Christian personally, but his writings were fully academic and accepted by the academic community. So even though in his personal life he was a Christian, in his lecturing he was doing everything by the book as an academic. And one of the strangest things that he said in his lecture on the evolution of civilizations was he made this very bizarre point about the blacks. He went on to say that scientifically, the only way that you can truly measure people is to put people of different races in the same position. He basically was trying to make an argument that, for example, let's say, for example, blacks in Africa, that the blacks of Africa, when they were left to themselves and before the white colonists came, the blacks of Africa had a tribal society. They had not even reached the state of, let's say, the ancient Greeks with city-states, or goodness me, the Sumerians and Babylonians who had city-states. And he therefore says that you can't judge them just on that. What you need to do is you need to actually take those people and put them into our situation, into giving them opportunities in the Western world, for example. He didn't say the Western world, but he basically indicated you've got to take these people and put them in a situation where they have the same access to things as whites, and that only then can you judge their ability. That because you've never given a black African a chance, you therefore don't know what he really is capable of. He's been denied opportunities, and because he's been denied opportunities, you don't really know what he can achieve. So you must put him in various positions so that he can then have a chance to prove what he can do. So that is kind of paraphrasing Quigley. Those aren't the exact words that he used, but that is paraphrasing Quigley and explaining what Quigley wrote. And what he wrote was in academic stuff. And he lectured this, and he taught this. And he taught this to white Americans, to liberals. So Quigley ignores IQ tests, psychology studies, and those things. And he ignores history. And he says, no, let's take those people and put them into positions and give them an opportunity. If you don't give a man an opportunity, then you don't know what he's capable of. So this sounds reasonable at first, and this sounds like, yes, this is a valid way to look at things. But when I compare that to what we know in Africa and what we experienced as whites in Africa, I actually think that there are a number of flaws in this approach. For example, he completely ignores IQ. He completely ignores the fact that psychologists have already studied these people for a long time, and that we know a lot about these people from their environment, and we know what they are and aren't capable of. We have had our scientists and our doctors and our psychologists look at them and assess them, and we have a form of measure, and that form of measure is IQ tests. Now, I just want to mention a bit more about IQ tests while we're at this, because this is a very interesting topic. There was an American friend of mine in the USA who, for a long time, I regarded as literally my brother, because we could speak about all kinds of things, and he was one of the very few Americans in the 1990s who understood communism in Africa. But what was really interesting was that he had been studying for his PhD in sociology, and then he actually left because it turned out that his professor was a Marxist, and he was studying in California, and he suddenly realized that all these professors are communists, and they actually hate America, and they actually invited him into their circles. And when he rejected that, you know, that went wrong for him, and he decided to call it quits. But what was really interesting was, because of his background in sociology, we had a bunch of discussions about IQ and intelligence. And he made the point that IQ has been shown to be an excellent predictor of people's ability. That in actual fact, these IQ tests that we have created, that our race has created, in order to measure people, that these IQ tests have a great value in the real world. That in fact, you can go and find things like correlations between IQ and income, and things like that, that achievement and intelligence are related. So returning back to IQ tests are not just tests just invented out of thin air that have no meaning in the real world. IQ tests have very, very valid predictive qualities. And then you've got aptitude tests. I don't hear many people talking about aptitude tests. It might be that the terms used in America are different to the terms I'm familiar with. So the things known as SAT tests in America, it says the SAT test, also known as the SAT reasoning test, is used in the application process to colleges and universities in the United States. The test measures critical thinking skills and the ability to analyze and solve problems, and is often thought of as a measure of future college success. And so the SAT tests measure your math, your reading and writing and verbal skills. Now, if I read up on aptitude tests, it says, what is an aptitude test? An aptitude test is a systematic means of testing a job candidate's abilities to perform specific tasks and react to a range of different situations. The tests each have a standardized method of administration and scoring. The results are quantified and compared with all other test takers. And another definition says, aptitude tests help companies select the ideal candidate in the sea of applicants they receive during every recruiting season. Here are 10 companies that use aptitude testing today as part of their recruitment process. So, a list of aptitude tests are the following: numerical reasoning tests, verbal reasoning, in-tray exercises, diagrammatic tests, situational judgment tests, inductive reasoning tests, cognitive ability tests, mechanical reasoning tests, Watson-Glaser tests, abstract reasoning tests, spatial awareness tests, error checking tests. So it looks to me like SAT tests and aptitude tests are not exactly the same thing, but they all seem to have various derivatives that are related to IQ tests. They don't seem to be exactly IQ tests, but they seem to be derived from that. Though SAT tests strike me as being perhaps closer to IQ tests. They definitely measure something very important, which is critical reasoning skills. So the bottom line is that there are many ways to measure people, but IQ test has a very, very specific and important role to play. It's the daddy of all mental ability tests. And so there are many ways to predict somebody's ability, many ways to predict somebody's ability, not only in life in general, but also with regard to different types of jobs and tasks. There are very sophisticated tests developed by the Western world. And the key thing to remember here is that these tests are done in such a sophisticated way that they are predictive. And I must add, I stand to be corrected, but I think that they can even do IQ tests even if somebody doesn't know how to read or write. So I checked around, and on Quora, I found these answers, because this is definitely taken care of. So the question was, can you test a person's IQ if he's totally uneducated or illiterate? And so here are two very important answers. One person wrote, yes, there are IQ tests designed specifically for this. IQ tests for young children and other non-readers rely more heavily on pattern recognition. This is the sort of IQ test given to my brother when he was 9 years old to find out what was wrong with him because he still couldn't read. The result of the IQ test was that his IQ was, a staggering, 220. Impossible, supposedly. So the same afternoon he was given an IQ test for adults, with the person administering the test reading the questions to him. Result of that test, if he'd been an adult instead of a 9-year-old kid, his IQ would be 146. So that's a specific example. Then someone else mentions Mensa. Mensa is an organization that focuses on the highly intelligent. And this is what someone wrote about Mensa. Yes, Mensa's test of progressive matrices, the official IQ test of an average score of around 100, doesn't require any knowledge at all, any knowledge of any language or even literacy. And then the person goes on to say, every internet so-called IQ test with questions are therefore false and measure more the amount of knowledge, ability, and language skill, since most people don't speak English as their native tongue, and most of the tests are in English. So the bottom line is that, yet again, white science has solved the problem, that we can test the IQ of people who are illiterate, we can test the IQ of children, we can test the IQ of people who can't read or write or don't understand a certain language. So measuring of IQ is therefore a done deal. We can get to the same outcome regardless of that person's situation. So to me, this suggests that Quigley's argument that you've got to put a person into a certain situation in order for that person to show what he's capable of, that argument runs kind of thin, because IQ is predictable and we've got many varying types of methods of measuring intelligence and ability and so forth, that I really don't think that Quigley's argument makes that much sense. If you want to be 100% scientific, then yes, it would indicate you must go and you must conduct an experiment and put these people in certain situations. But I would then say that if you want to be scientific, truly scientific, then you need to take a white man and put him in a situation and put a black man in 100% exactly the same situation. And you don't have to make him the mayor of a city in order to test him. You could still devise some kind of test. Anyway, but that is the thinking that Quigley put out there. And the problem with that thinking is it's dangerous. Now, suddenly, you are going to go and start putting people into all kinds of positions that they actually are unsuited for. But with Quigley's argument, the cat is kind of out of the bag, and now you've opened a door, and now the liberals and Jews can abuse it. And so the bogus argument can be used. Oh, these people have never been given a chance, therefore you must give them a chance, and we've been so bad to them, that's why they're not performing. You see, once you open that freaking door, then all that junk garbage thinking comes in. But now, to people in the Western world, in North America and Europe, who don't have these large populations of blacks and non-whites, they then can easily be fooled into thinking, well, you know, it's us. The problem isn't them, the problem is us. However, in Africa, it's different. In Africa, where the whites are few and you're totally surrounded by these people, it is very easy to begin to observe these people and to start coming up and saying, you know what, look at that guy. I gave him a task to do yesterday and he didn't do this and that, and he's not reliable, or so on. Because that is the nature of day-to-day life in Africa. It's not like you don't see these people and you have no contact with them. It's that you have contact with them all the time. And you know them by name, you know everything about them, and you can say, you know, Jim over there, I gave him this little task to do, I showed him how to do it exactly, and look at how he's buggering it up. Another thing is, I gave him a task to do, I showed him how to do something last week, and a week later I had to show him again because he couldn't understand it. He'd forgotten how to do it. I'm not joking with you. These are the kinds of things that have happened in Africa. So even if you're not scientific, the fact is you've got lots of actual experience. And then in Africa also, at a point, there were guys like the globalist Cecil John Rhodes, who was actually a Freemason secretly. He actually conducted experiments about 120 years ago with blacks ruling themselves. They actually conducted those experiments. And in the decades that followed, whites conducted the same experiments over and over again in black self-rule, for example. It was done in South Africa, it was done in Rhodesia, everywhere. So even though we don't use the same level of science in Africa, the fact of the matter is that we do have practical experience and we have conducted very real-world experiments with these people. And then we'd say, but these people are just not the same as us. But now you've got these liberals who are arguing about these non-whites not getting opportunities, yada, yada, yada. They are people who've never been given a chance. That's why they're all uptight. That's why they're so angry, etc., etc. But there is one other argument that I've never heard anybody use, and I think that that is also a very valid argument, if not the most valid argument. And it is simply this, that if you were to look at history and look at the history of whites, it occurred to me that, hold on, so the blacks only got to the point where they had huts, okay? And apart from Timbuktu, the only permanent city in all of Africa, which, by the way, had a Muslim influence. And you could say that the intellectuals in Timbuktu were actually Muslims. Other than that, you know, all of Africa was just composed of huts and things, and blacks who were constantly on the move. The fact of the matter is that whites also used to live in huts. Whites also lived in caves. Whites also did not have the kinds of things that we have now. But nobody came to give white people any opportunity ever. So whites used to live in huts. Whites used to have nothing. And nobody ever came to teach whites, came to show whites, came to help them get opportunities. Never ever did that happen in 40,000 years of white history in Europe and Asia, because we're also partly Asian. We've moved a lot across Asia and the Middle East. So we did live in huts. We did live in caves, but we uplifted ourselves. And not only did we do it, but we did it without any help and in the face of opposition and life-threatening situations. We had enemies who would attack us to kill us, and it was that simple. And given that blacks have lived in Africa for tens of thousands of years, maybe like other humans, they've been around maybe 200,000 years or whatever, you know, they've also had a chance. They've also had a chance in which to learn and to develop, and they only got to the level of huts. Is there any particular reason why those people didn't go further? Now, this is where a British academic called Lynn has made the point that maybe our intelligence comes from basically hardship, that our intelligence is the result of hardship, that we lived in an ice age, that we lived under very, very difficult conditions, and that we had to evolve and do better, or else we would die. We would die if we didn't. And it is actually quite well recognized. His theory is actually the theory that has been accepted the most, even among scientists. And that they then say that the reason these other people in Africa didn't develop was because life was much easier. And this line of thinking is actually quite well accepted scientifically, as far as I know. This is scientific thinking, and it's quite well accepted. And if you look at Africa versus the place where whites lived in a hell. And Asians as well also have a higher IQ. But Asians also live in the Northern Hemisphere, and they live in difficult and nasty situations. So all I'm trying to sketch here is that we know a lot about the differences between people, and we can measure it exactly scientifically. And a lot of thought has gone into all these different things. And we know and can assess a tremendous amount of things about people, any people, whether they can speak our language or not. And I actually found that the lowest IQ ever measured for humans was measured here in Southern Africa among the Bushmen, and that the lowest IQ for a human being is something like 39, whereas 100 is the average, more or less, for the Western world. So for us, 99 to 100 is more or less average. It used to be 100. I see a couple of nations are now 99 and 98, but that may be due to other people being there. And also just, God help us, if there's been actual genetic damage. But IQs lower than 50, I didn't know that there were any humans with IQs lower than 50. But the lowest ever measured was in Southern Africa, and it was Bushmen, otherwise known as the Sand People. It was an individual Bushman, and his IQ was 39. I think that must be the lowest IQ ever measured for a human being, a living human being on the planet. Now, our science and our way of thinking and our precision, our European developed way of thinking and precision, this is very important. We are a people who go and we tackle problems and we get down and we really solve them and look at them. But somehow lately, we are doing weird and stupid things. So now let's get back to the original topic, which is the difference in thinking between Europeans and Jews. And it's something that I sat and pondered a lot when I look at these bizarre kinds of statements and concepts that come out of these liberals. Because this notion that you need to start promoting people and giving people opportunities, even when you could actually upfront determine that that person's not capable of that. But now you've got this counter-liberal argument, oh no, you see, you've got to give him a chance, and then you measure him after that. When in fact we've got tons and tons of stuff, whether it's history, whether it's physical experience in Africa, or whether it's our own scientific tools and techniques for measuring IQ. The fact is that now you get the liberal coming along and he says, no, no, you know, ignore all of that. Ignore it, all that mountain of knowledge. We've still got to promote this guy, you know, because he's unhappy and so on. Now, some of this is an emotional argument. And Jews themselves could be pushing a lot of emotional arguments. That is one thing that I've noticed a lot, and you even get this concept called emotional intelligence, which is a new thing. There never used to be such a thing. There's only logic, there's only your brain capacity. Now suddenly you've got emotional intelligence, somehow your feelings are now a form of intelligence. I personally regard this as bunk and rubbish. And it sounds to me like modern Jewish crap. Modern Jewish, maybe liberal crap, but it sounds to me like it's a Jewish kind of an argument. Whereas our thinking is logic and science. And I want to come back to this because it is predictive, it is real. And our stuff is real. It's got real world value. It's not for fiction. All our things as a race eventually boil down to reality. And the final end result is things like trains, planes, spacecraft, cars, guns, you name it, electronics, radio waves, all these kinds of things. Our stuff eventually translates into physical reality. And I want to return to that because our ability to manipulate physical reality is one of the greatest features of our race. It is an unbelievable feature and it's very unique, I want to tell you. But I don't want to go into that here. But my point is that our stuff does not belong in a world of fiction. It doesn't belong as a mental image in our minds. It is something that is real. It is real. It is tangible. It is tangible. If you go and you jump in front of a moving car, the car's going to rip you to pieces and kill you. So you don't do that because that thing is a physical creation and our physical creations work. You don't go and say to somebody, hey, fire that bullet at me and let's see if it actually does something. We know it will hurt you and maybe kill you outright. We know our stuff works, okay? So it's not like a bunch of mumbo jumbo and witchcraft and we're guessing and hoping and thinking that it might or might not work. It actually does freaking work in the real world. If you take an electric chainsaw and you try and saw someone's hand off, it really will saw that person's hand off, okay? It's not like it's a chainsaw that only operates in my imagination. It operates in the real world, in the real actual world, okay? Whereas when you are dealing with a lot of this Jewish crap, that stuff doesn't have real world value. And the emphasis here is the real world, because that's where we are currently having problems. We're having problems in the real world. We're having problems with ourselves. And we are the last people on earth who should be having any kind of real world problems, because we are the masters of the world. We are the masters of nature, and we are the masters of physics and all these kinds of things. Yet we don't appreciate that aspect of ourselves. However, let's return to the liberals. All these liberals and Jews are constantly talking about other people and about how we are at fault for doing things and we are ignoring all these other unhappy people who we've got to take care of them because they're unhappy because we're treating them badly. Now, one of the things that is a kind of a driving force for this is that maybe we are heading down a path where things that started, maybe with the French Revolution, concepts that were launched in the time of the French Revolution, that some of those concepts have now grown and grown and being abused and extended to a point where we are entering a very dangerous situation. You see, the French Revolution was about freedom and equality, but that was for people in Europe. But then these French also tried to start expanding it to being universalist. And they even applied it to blacks, and even applied it in places like Haiti, where the blacks later came and killed the whites. And the blacks came and killed the whites again. And so it went on. So when you have this democracy and all this talk of equality, and you start applying it universally, now you are living with this concept that all people are the same, all people are equal. And go and look around, and the entire world now operates on this basis that all people are equal, all people are the same. But scientifically, historically, and practically, we know this is not true. We know this is just junk. This is not true. Our very specific, very accurate science based on critical thinking and proper measurable methods of experimentation, etc., has shown us clearly that this is not the case. But politically, where we live in a la-la land of complete bloody idiocy, politically, everyone's like, yeah, no, we're equal. And that's the drumbeat of the whole freaking world. The whole world has been taken into a situation where whites across the planet, you cannot find a white man anywhere on the planet who will admit to the notion that, you know, maybe we're not equal. For him to even open his mouth and make the statement that we're not equal, that in and of itself could get him destroyed. It's like a crime, and he's going to be bludgeoned to death, literally. His career will be destroyed. He'll lose his job if he goes and says this. If he goes and states something that is obvious, it's even obvious, in fact. You don't even need to be a scientist in order to realize these things. But we've gotten to a point where what these politician scumbags are saying is not matching reality. And it's like this everywhere now, where insanity and stupidity and emotion and just assorted crap is now regarded as reality. So you've got all this weird political crap and weird political nonsense spoken in business and everywhere else. And it's in conflict with the way our countries are, and it's in conflict with the behavior of whites. So one of the things that I was sitting and thinking about is that maybe, apart from Jews having specific agendas, which they do, and they're also busy at times just being totally spiteful as well, by the way. But I also think that there are times when Jews are also just idiots, too. I don't really regard these people as superior in any way. And they can be many things. They can sometimes just be full of shit. They can be malicious. But I also think that there are times when they're just dumb, when they are themselves, and their methods are garbage. Now, if you look at the Jews, you'll see that these people are basically nomadic. They are international nomads. Hitler himself said this, that they are basically international nomads, a sort of a wealthy nomad, and these people are wandering around and they're basically looking for opportunities, and then they settle, and then when they've emptied out the whole place and things have gone wrong, they then make a run for it and they go settle somewhere else. So they are nomadic in that sense. They are nomadic parasites, actually. But their method of working is based on business. Ultimately, business is the thing that drives this nomadic parasite. And in business, you need to do things through cooperation. Even if the cooperation is itself disingenuous, but in order to pull off the deal, you have to fool someone for long enough in order to pull off the deal. So, when I look at Jews, I see Jews as being like the farmers of people. They farm with people. They deal with people. And a Jew doesn't go and dig a mine. A Jew doesn't want to build a city. A Jew doesn't want to go and farm the land. But the Jew will go and deal with a farmer. He will deal with a builder. He will deal with whoever. So he doesn't do things directly. He does things indirectly. And he always does it through people. Even though he himself is not really a good people person, but he's functioning through people. Whites are different. We don't really function through people. We function through reality. We function through technical stuff. We function with the real world. So if you had to take whites and Jews back like 30,000 years, then if the Jew needed elephant meat or mammoth meat, the Jew wouldn't go and kill the mammoth, but he'll go and pay a bunch of hunters to go and kill the mammoth. Whereas the whites will go and kill the mammoth. And I see us as being different in that sense, that Jews are using other humans as their tools. You know, these people don't do the hard labor directly. If Jews need to go into space, they'll pay an astronaut to go into space, but they won't go and take the risks of life and death themselves, whereas whites will. Whites do. Whites do the direct interaction regardless of danger. Regardless of danger, effort, risk, and all that, whites go and do the thing directly. So my argument is that Jews need cooperation and only cooperation in order to function. That is the very basis of their existence, that they have to use other humans. So even if it's the Silk Road of centuries ago, where you got to get spices and silks from China and Asia through to Europe, that trade, that's what they're interested in. They don't manufacture those things, but they handle the business of moving it, because ultimately their goal is money, and money is portable. And that's the other thing for them, is that when things go wrong, because money is portable, as long as they get their physical body out of the country along with their money, then they're sorted. So things can go wrong and they just run to the next destination. But the point is that their method of working that is natural to them is cooperation, even though their cooperation will eventually fall apart and they will have all kinds of things going wrong, and then they have to run and flee and so forth. But that is their basic method of working and thinking, is to manipulate people, play with people, etc. And that Jewish business thinking requires, for success, it requires some kind of cooperation. Even if it's disingenuous, even if they're busy cheating someone or lying to somebody in order to get the deal, they need human cooperation. They can put on an act, they can do all kinds of things in order to get that cooperation. So even a totally disingenuous approach works for them, because they need the cooperation of that person at that point in time. So whether they get that cooperation by telling the truth or by telling a lie, it doesn't matter. They need to get that cooperation. And as long as they have it for that period of time, then they've scored and they are sorted out. But whites are different, and whites don't need that kind of cooperation. And we are a different kind of a people. We think in a different way, and especially in pre-Christian times, we were very different. And our way of thinking is what I would call European or Aryan militaristic thinking. You see, we don't need other people's cooperation. If you go and you look at our history for thousands of years has been a history of conflict. And it's even a history of conflict even in modern times, where we've now had these so-called two world wars, which were in reality just wars aimed at destroying Germany, that's all. But look at our history. Yes, we are capable of cooperation. We are capable of it. But we are not fully dependent on it. And when we do our cooperation and any relations that we have with other people, we don't have to lie to people. We have our limits of how far we go. Regardless of the weaknesses of any nation or group of whites, for the most part, we attempt to have a pretty decent form of interaction and cooperation. We will not go overboard and do it at all costs and be totally disingenuous. We do generally have our limits of behavior when we cooperate. And that is because we have another side to us, and that side is the military side. Now, the military side and warfare, which was a big thing for us always, and the pagans didn't stand back in that regard. The pagans, the pre-Christian whites, weren't afraid of warfare. So the pre-Christian whites could interact with anybody, strike deals with people, have friends and cooperate, but they could also turn around and kick you straight in the teeth when they felt that you needed it. And that's a very important part of our race. Now, look at warfare. What is warfare? Warfare basically amounts to the following situation, that there are people who are opposed to something that we want. Or we want something and somebody else says, no, no, you can't have that. No, you can't have that territory, or you can't have this, or you can't have that. So warfare is different to cooperation. Warfare is about the fact that you want something or somebody else wants something and the other side says no. So unlike business, where in order for business to work, both sides have to agree and the Jew will get the deal even if he has to lie and trick and play games, we have our limits and there comes a time where we say no. So maybe somebody wants something from us that we don't want to give them. Maybe it's a piece of territory. Or we want a piece of territory and the other one says, no, you can't have it. Now, that is the start of warfare. You want something and somebody doesn't want you to have it. Or somebody wants something that you regard as yours and you say, no, you can't have that thing. So now you've got two sides that disagree. And how do you deal with that? Well, warfare is about getting your way in the face of opposition. That is what warfare is. It is about getting your way in the face of opposition. Either you want some territory and they say no, and then you say, well, I'm going to get it over your dead body. That's what I'm going to do. I want that thing, and I don't really care what your viewpoint is, I'm going to get it. Or, you want that thing from me, you're not going to get it. I'm going to stop you. So warfare is when there's a breakdown. Warfare is when there's a breakdown in relations and you are going to deal with a situation where the other side opposes you. So warfare is the total opposite of cooperation. Warfare is about getting your way or protecting your interests in the face of hostility. So it's about getting your way when the others disagree with you. That's what warfare is. It's a completely different mindset. Now, in warfare, your thinking is totally different to this endless cooperative type of thinking. In warfare, if somebody comes and they dare to take you on, and you are superior to them, and you crush them, you don't care about their feelings. You don't care about cooperating with them, because you don't need to. You can have your way, regardless of how they feel about a thing. It is the opposite of business. It is the opposite of diplomacy. It is simply that I can get it from you, or I determine it's important enough to get it from you, and I'm going to get it. And I don't care whether you like it or you don't like it. And this is militaristic thinking. So in a militaristic paradigm, the only time you are worried about somebody is if they are strong enough to oppose you. But in all other respects, if you can overcome the problem, even if they're superior to you, if you can find a way to destroy them or crush them or break them, then you got your way. It's not about cooperation. You may have to cooperate with others who are your allies, and you will need allies, even economic allies, other kinds of allies, diplomatic allies. You will have friends. You are never totally alone, and you are never against everybody. But the enemy that you're focusing on at that point in time is somebody you don't care what they think. You know that they're thinking against you, but it doesn't matter because you're going to take them on and you're going to do your utmost to have your own way. So militaristic thinking is the opposite of cooperation, and you don't care. You don't need to worry about equality. You don't need to worry about whether they like you. You don't need their cooperation in order to get what you want. You don't need their cooperation. You will go and you will take it from them over their living or dead bodies. You will take it from them and it's going to be yours. So it's a whole different world and way of thinking. So fast forward back to modern, stupid, retarded, clown world times, where suddenly you are rushing around to pretend that you're equal to everybody and that everybody can do the same as you. And yes, it doesn't matter that a low IQ citizen is entering your country. Yes, give him the vote. Give him the vote. He may be low IQ, but hey, he's equal to you. So now that whole area has become blurred, and everything is based on the junk belief that all people are equal. The junk belief that everybody is the same and that you need to treat them the same. I personally believe that the losing of the whites in Africa has allowed liberals and Jews and others to make nasty, disingenuous arguments that have now reached the Western world, where the Western world, having seen that, oh goodness, the Russians and Chinese armed some blacks in Africa, and eventually they were able to do things, that, you know what, we got to be careful. Those people need to be treated better, otherwise they'll fight us. What is missing in that equation, what is totally missing in the equation, is of course the handful of whites who were kicking the hell out of these blacks for decades, and that a handful of whites could actually hold back all these hordes of blacks. The fact is that the Western world has become so afraid of any kind of conflict, especially when it's outside their countries, but now even inside their countries, there's all this weird Jewy kind of junk thinking that you've got to accommodate everybody. And when it comes to guilt, well, we whites, we are going to be the perfect people that you can play guilt trips on. Why? Because we've been so successful. We have crushed so many. We have gone in that European, Aryan, militaristic way, and we've conquered huge chunks of the world and crushed people. Even the people in North America wiped out, smashed, and crushed the Indians. So in North America, in Australia, in New Zealand, in Africa, parts of Asia, you know, whites have gone and kicked people's asses. All of South America, Latin America, whites have gone and kicked people's asses and done what they wanted to do. And so, yeah, if you believe in all this junk, crap, political, business, diplomatic kind of thinking, then indeed, you then need to be friends with everybody and you can't make anybody angry. You are functioning in a very fragile world. What people forget is that when the Jews function in that world, that that world is regularly breaking down and Jews have to keep moving. Whereas whites are different. Whites set up shop in a country, in a piece of territory, and whites stay there. Whites will stay there for the next 10,000 years without moving. Again, that's a different kind of a thinking. And so can you really bring in this Jewy business cooperative junk thinking where you got to be buddies with the whole world and you got to do it in your own country? Whereas in actual fact, our race has gone out, smashed people, bust them into the ground and conquered them and then told them, listen, this is what you are going to do. And you don't care what they think or what they feel. You're not concerned with their emotions. You are in charge and you tell them and force them to do what you want to do. That is a very Aryan kind of European style where we will come, we'll smash you down and we're going to be the boss now and we're going to tell you what you're going to do. And you now are slaves or conquered peoples and we're going to set the rules for you. It is a very different kind of thinking. And in that thinking, you don't need to make the other side happy. You don't care. Because if they don't like it, they can try and fight you. And you might go and kick them in the face and put them in their place. God, it's almost poetic. So when you look at these politicians and they're all busy with this, oh, you got to keep this one happy, keep that one happy, running around, keep everyone happy. That's kind of Jewy crap thinking, and it's not our normal selves. And I just want to make you aware of this difference in thinking. And because we haven't conquered properly in modern times, we have forgotten what it is like to conquer. We have forgotten the mindset of how you think. How did the Romans think? How did the Gauls think? How did the Celts think? How did the Germanic tribes think? How did the Aryan tribes think? And you'll find that all of our history, our people had a militaristic kind of view of things. We didn't just bend down for anybody, even for each other. And we would deal with each other up to a point and then we'd say, hey, you know, bugger you and we will fight you. We are not Jews and we don't behave like Jews. But liberalism is making us think like Jews. We are thinking like Jewish people, and we're thinking that we need to have, at least in a fake way even, everybody on our side. No, we don't. No, we don't. And we need to get back to the things that work for us. To think like a Jew is not our personality, and we mustn't do that. We must be ourselves. We are going to be much more functional when we are ourselves. I cannot stress this enough to you, and I'm going to be back with that kind of stuff. I want to show you that we are absolutely perfectly okay when we are ourselves. And to behave in this Jewy crap, liberal crap way is not our nature. It flies in the face of our nature. There is something inside us that says, hey, it's time to tell that person, get your act together or I'm going to come and kick your ass. And hey, you must behave that way and this and that. That is our stuff. That is what we are. But it works for us, and it does work for us. And we must stop pretending to be Jews and stop acting like Jews, because there are many negatives that come from that. Deep down, we're also not really fooling the others anyway. The others know what we are by our actual temperament, but now we are trying to fool them, and we're not good at fooling other people because that is also not normal for us. We really, really, really need to focus on being what we are, because we're almost becoming schizophrenic and weird and mentally unstable by jumping between this kind of thinking of, oh, we've got to please everybody and you've got to show that you didn't do the wrong thing and this and that, compared to the proper Aryan European thinking, which is that, you know what, I'll be nice to that lot up to a point, but if they go over that limit, I'm going to go kick them in their teeth. I'm going to fix them. And that is much more our personality, and there are many benefits that come out of that. And remember that we have conquered and ruled most of the world. Europe ended up conquering most of the world. And in actual fact, the offshoots of Europe stretch from all of North America down into big chunks of South America, you know, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and we even had outposts all over Asia, and all of Africa, every inch of Africa used to be ours. So, you know, for us as a people to be walking around, crawling around, and oh no, no, we got to please this guy. His IQ is only 40, but he's my equal, and I've got to keep him happy, or he's going to hurt me. No, this is not us, okay? This is not us, but most importantly, this also doesn't work for us. And we mustn't become schizophrenic and have two competing and totally opposite views of life. We need to settle down to what we are, what we have always been. And the reason for it is that fits our character, it fits our abilities, and most importantly, it makes us successful. When we operate on our natural principles, we're also at our strongest and most successful. We have the ability to form judgments, and we go out and we say our say. And in the longer term, I will also show you that this kind of behavior ultimately will buy us respect. Now compare that to Jews. Who respects Jews? Well, the only people who respect Jews are the idiots who don't know anything about the Jewish history. So it is only while you are fooled by Jews that you can respect them. The moment that you know them as a people, then you realize, good God, these people are disgusting. They're disgusting in so many ways. These are actually a very contemptible people, and their style of thinking is contemptible. And I want to tell you that Jews, in the long term, will be hated by almost everybody on the planet. I'm convinced of that. And whatever there are in terms of other peoples who will hate us, there is still a level of respect for us that Jews will never be able to get. Jews are such a contemptible people that people just won't be able to respect them. I've seen this, I've looked at this, and I want to tell you that having respect and commanding some kind of respect in the real world also has value. It has major value. But you only get it by behaving in the way that you are. And this schizophrenic kind of behavior is very confusing, And it's actually very dangerous. I personally also think that liberals and even leftists who are being used by the Jews, that ultimately those people themselves will gain a contempt for the Jews because the Jews are actually lying to them and manipulating them. So let me explain it like this. The liberal may, for example, believe the Jewish crap that you need to give a guy a chance because he's unhappy and he's against you because you've never given him a chance. And so he does it on that basis. But the Jews themselves may actually be merely looking by way of sophistry, they may be merely looking at opportunities to destroy us or damage us. And so their real goal is they need to get a black guy into a position, and we would normally disqualify him. So they grab onto any argument or anything, no matter how bogus and irrational it is, in order to get what they want. They look at what they need. So they say, oh, we need a black guy in that powerful position because we need to get rid of the white guy. That's the real reason. But they are now saying that he can't make it. So let's get him in on the basis that he's never been given a chance. Oh, give him a chance, give him a chance, let him prove himself. They may even know that he's going to be a failure, but they don't care because they've got an ulterior motive. So you are dealing with all this creepy, weird, Jewy crap thinking. And some of it may have infected liberals who've like bought into it in a slightly other way, but ultimately it's all crap. Okay, it's all crap and it's Jewy crap that sits in the Western world and it's messing with everyone's head. And these pathetic, contemptible, weak scum politicians across the Western world are using this kind of thinking all the time, and it's a drumbeat that's in the mass media all the time. And it's just rubbish. It's very bad. And there may even be other nations like Asian nations that might actually be laughing at us. But the key issue here is that there are two modes of thinking, and we need to return to that European militaristic thinking. We also have a concept of honor, and honor says we will behave in this proper way towards people, but our sense of honor also requires that, you know, if you're a douchebag and you've been stabbing us in the back, then we're going to come and kick your ass. So this is our kind of thinking, and our kind of thinking works. We've built empires, we've conquered continents, our thinking works. And we never have to flee. We can live in the same place for 1,000 years without a problem. Whereas Jews are constantly on the run. They are so nomadic that when I look at the movements of the Jewish population of the world, these people are moving around every 2 generations or so. Every 2 or 3 generations, Jews have got to be on the run because their stuff ain't working, man. Their stuff doesn't work. But if you want to keep your country and you want to carry on building on it, which is a wise long-term strategy, now you've got to adopt Jewy crap thinking. No, don't go there. Don't go there. Whites, be yourselves. Go with your natural nature. This is what works for us. And it's brought us incredible success in the past. There's absolutely no reason why it can't do so in the future. But there are many other things that I want to tackle, various specific aspects of these things, but I just wanted to make it clear to you that liberal thinking, political thinking, all this junk thinking, this is business thinking. A lot of it's business thinking, it's Jewy thinking, and it's insane. And we've got to get out of that and be ourselves. Once we are ourselves, then we don't really care too much who likes us and who doesn't like us, because militarily it doesn't matter if they don't like you. If you can defend yourself, then they can think what the hell they want, but you will still be what you are, and you will still do what you think is right and good for you. And we've got to get back to that way of thinking. We are going to lose if we don't think properly. Hitler, Napoleon, Caesar, all our greats going back into pagan times, all our greats thought in this European, Aryan, militaristic way. And it is a much better system. It lasts long, and this is the way we should live for all time. It's the valid way to live. Our experiences, we must work within our paradigm of our experiences, what works for us, what we're capable of. Because we not only create nations, we create so many other things. And we've got unique creations, our inventions, our science, our technology, our culture. We've got tons of stuff that's just invented by us. So we don't need to worry, oh goodness, there's a Bushman in Botswana and he doesn't like me. Oh God, I've got to go and do something about that. Please get out of that crap thinking, okay? Get out of that crap thinking and start thinking sanely in the way that is normal for you. Don't listen to the Jewish parasite. The Jewish parasite is just busy playing us like it plays everybody else. And what we need to do is we need to win. And we need to win big. And the only way we're going to do it is by being ourselves. Stop listening to everybody else. Listen to ourselves. Think for ourselves. Act in the way that is natural according to our own minds and experience. That will give us the best end results. These are my websites. historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.